You are listening to the eReal Estate Coach Podcast, featuring RealTrends top 500 broker, Jim Remley. On this show, we interview interesting people in the real estate industry to help agents, broker owners, and team leaders accelerate their performance.
Hey guys, I'm super excited. We have a very special guest for the show today, Mr. Chris Prefontaine. Chris has been in the real estate industry for over 31 years. He's the chairman and founder of Smart Real Estate Coach, four-time best-selling author, Forbes Business Council member. He's part of the 5,000 fastest growing companies on transforming W-2 employees into creative financing real estate investors, over 100 million in transactions completed with his group. And he hosts the Smart Real Estate Coach Podcast. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So Chris, walk people through, you got a long background, 31 years in the business. I've been in the business 32 years, so we're right on track.
Love it.
So kind of walk us through what your kind of journey in the industry and where you're at and what you're coaching people on.
I don't want to put everybody to sleep for 13 years. So what I'll do is I'll give 10,000 foot view, Jim, and then you can pull me back to any piece of that you want. How's that? Good.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. So early 90s, I started doing what I called spot building, where we would pick up lots in infill lots and subdivisions or someone's home that had extra land and would help them subdivide it, but would always do single lots. And I was sort of naive back then in my 20s. I went around and I asked the landowners to wait. I asked the vendors to wait. If we build a house, we'll build it on the land. We'll put it up. And then when it's sold, that's when everybody gets paid at the very end. And yeah. I think of that now. I'm thinking, I don't know if I would even ask people that now. And I'm in creative real estate, but it worked. We did over 100 homes.
Wow.
Then I bought a realty executives franchise for all your brokers and your realtors. I had never done that. So I did my time enough to get a broker's license, got it, bought a realty executives. And then I had one goal in mind, Jim, at the time, it was to sell it in 5 years. And everyone said, you can't do that. You're not going to sell your brokerage. So we did sell it to Coldwell Banker. It wasn't enormous, but at that time in my life, it was, because we sold it in 2000. I was like 34 years old. And that was a big hit. It was like $250,000.
Yeah.
They basically took me and my team into their company, basically what they did, and did it on compete. It was good. Yeah. After that, I worked my own investments and started coaching realtors throughout US and Canada. They were all like GCI, $1 million to $2 million. Mm-hmm. So they know how to do business, but their life was a bit of a mess and their schedules and everything else. So I coached on that.
Yeah.
And then the crash came. The crash came in 08. And for those of you that weren't lucky enough to go through it like Jim and I did, it was you could never convince me when I was going through it that it would be a good thing, but it's exactly why I'm where I am today, because I left that and I said, all right, wait a minute. If we're going to be in real estate, because I was so brain dead, Jim, I didn't think I would go back in. Mm. If we're going to sort of, what are the rules we're going to play by? And some of them were things like, don't ever sign on bank debt again personally, unless it's for a personal residence and you can keep the LTV super low because you just can't find a house the way we buy now. Okay, that's acceptable. But other than that, I don't. And then secondly, I was really stuck on, I think this will hit home with everyone. I was stuck on, look, if I'm going to do this, I didn't want to do it where I was doing a transaction, i.e. as a broker or builder or a rehabber, and then get one check. I said, let's create a system where we can get multiple paydays. So we trademarked actually now federally the 3-payday system so that I can get paid now, sure. I can get monthly income, and then I can get long-term wealth building income, which is cool for any business. It happens to be in real estate for me. So that's great for any broker or realtor listening. And we've done that now. When I say we have a family company. It's myself, my son-in-law, my son, my wife, and my daughter. We buy properties in the New England area. And we do it without banks, without using our own money. Certainly not gobs of money, tiny bit when and if we do. I'm talking hundreds, not tens of thousands. And then we also teach that. You mentioned Inc. 5000. This is the third year in a row we hit that with Smart Real Estate Coach. And that's the coaching side of things. And I'll wrap up with this thought, and then we can go back to any part of it. The reason it's different, and the reason we're growing like we are, is there's just a lot of, in my opinion, and I'll see what you think of this, a lot of junk stuff being marketed in the real estate education field. It just is reality.
Yep.
And they know how to market, and that's what they know how to do. So they get you to buy, but there's nothing behind it. We come in and we actually lock arms with our students, and we do deals in the trenches with them. So when they hit the speed bump or they hit, tough time, they come to us because we're almost like partners, even though it's their deal. We're in the trenches with them. So that was my best 3 minutes, 32 years.
That's good. That's good. So I'm a believer. I'm an investor as well. I definitely believe as realtors, I think the biggest mistake that realtors make is they don't invest in what they're selling. And how can you talk to people effectively when you're not actually buying what you're selling. So I'm curious about the concept though of you're doing it in a different way, obviously a creative way. Kind of, if you don't mind, walk us through how you came to that and what that exactly means.
Yeah, how we came to it was finishing that story from 08 was I literally, my credit was in the toilet. It was great before the crash. And I'll let me give you dates. February of 08, I talked about this in the beginning of my book. It was, I know where I was sitting. I know what the kids were doing. Like, it was ugly. It's like a light switch got thrown, right? And nothing happened. Like, it was dead. And it took me till February of 12, 4 years to get out of my head mentally, mindset, and just get back in the game. And so when I get back in, you said, how did it kind of come about? I had no credit and I definitely was negative cash flow. And I had moved my wife and I from a 2.5 acre property overlooking Newport Harbor, which is tough to find now, if not impossible. And we moved into a 900 square foot apartment for a $900 rent. That was a little bit of a humbling experience, but it's why and how I built what we have today. And so in hindsight, it was the best thing, like I said, that ever happened.
Yeah. So then you started looking at how can I buy some properties creatively using creative financing? Is that how you did it?
Yeah. So we said, okay, the only three ways we're going to do this as we laid out the plan, I say we, it was me and my wife. And then my son was the first family member to join. Yeah. But we said, let's do owner financing, lease purchase, or subject to existing financing. There's the only three ways we'll buy. And I was saying to you off air, if I knew, like when I was a broker and a realtor, we were humming along at like 100 homes the last 3 years, 100 homes a year. And if I knew how to do this at the time, I would have been a much more effective agent because I could have looked the seller in the eye and said, hey, tell me a scenario. And if you can't afford the commission or if you're upside down or, you know, if it doesn't fit in my realtor box, I'll look at buying it and I'll do the best for them. Well, you know how fast that spreads when a realtor is that like talented, knows how to do that. It's just you become the authority real quick.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so when you're starting to buy properties on for your own account, are these all fixers? Are they, you're not flipping? Are you buying and holding? What is your question.
So we don't fix and flip. My wife and I will play with projects on the side. We always have. But the main model that we do here and teach is we will buy a property one of those three ways I said, and we exit almost all, just from the sake of time today, almost all with a rent-to-own tenant buyer, we call it. Yeah. And this is also taught incorrectly across the country. That a lot of investors will teach to put a tenant buyer in a home and not really care if they're qualified to ever cash out. Well, that's really setting them up to fail big time. So morally and ethically, it stinks. What we do is my son Nick handles the buyers. They go through underwriting just like anyone else would. They go through credit repair and a credit check. So we have a mortgage plan that might go out like 12 or 36 months. Mm-hmm. As long as that term of getting them mortgage ready fits with inside my terms that I have with my seller, because we got to cash the house out, that's a win-win. And we only default on like 2 to 10% of these. That's an inverse relationship, sadly, to what other people do in the industry with rent to own. So we've really got it dialed in. We're so strict with the buyers.
Gotcha. Now talk to me about the seller conversation. So when you're talking to a seller and you're explaining, hey, I have this option for you rather than the traditional option, here's an option. What does that look like? What's that conversation look like?
Yep. A couple of things. So it's the same question that all the realtors are used to asking, right? Like for me, it's where are you going? Why? By when? And what if that doesn't happen conventionally, whether they're with a realtor or FSBO or whatever at the time? And that tells me, usually that tells me their whole motivation, right? In a nutshell, if they're open, they're talking.
Yeah.
If they say something such that I can solve in the case of when I buy, if they're financially hurting, or in the case of a debt-free property, like the building I'm standing in, which I'll explain, that's not a problem they got to solve. It's a, hey, I didn't get my price or the way I wanted to do it on the open market, so they'll do owner financing. So I'm trying to solve a problem or give them something the conventional market didn't give them. Traditionally, that's all we're doing. So the conversation will sound like this. If you don't need all your, if I can get you to your price, no matter what kind of property it is, can you wait on your equity if they have equity? And if they can't, they absolutely cannot. And you find out, because most people say, no, I want my money. But if they absolutely cannot wait because they're going to go buy a family home or whatever, and they got to do that with their kids, then I'm not the buyer. If they can wait, like people that are free and clear, no mortgage usually can, like this building, then we structure the terms we want. We just give them the price.
Gotcha. So, it's, you know, the old term that we used to always use is it's price or terms. 100%. I mean, you can make any deal work as long as the terms work, right? And, and the terms reflective in the, I guess it's probably a lot of different creative ways, but is it Is it interest rate? Is it the length of the loan? Is it those kinds of things that's what's going to, you're going to negotiate?
Yeah. I tell people it's exactly how you said, I tell sellers if they say to me, like, we don't do down payment usually. So if they say, I want down, I say, well, what's more important, the down payment or the price? Well, I want my price. Okay. I can't give you both. Right. Mm-hmm. Or it's, there might be four things. It might be price, term, interest, and down. And I'll say, okay, well, there's four pieces of that quadrant. What are the two most important? I can't give you all four. It's just a fair, logical conversation, right? Sure. Like, here's a great example. I like live examples. So this building, the gentleman that was selling it had a big sign on a busy road. They call it Million Dollar Mile out here. So it's not like it's hidden. 4x8 sheet that said owner financing. And he said to me, brokers are calling me saying, I got an offer for you. He said, I don't want it. I want, for trust planning reasons and for tax reasons, I want to owner finance it.
Yeah.
And he said, they just didn't get it. So I gave him his full price at the time. And I said to him, now this guy was not a newbie. He owned most of the land in the area. He sadly has passed away. But he said, I said to him, I do principal only on most of my owner financing deals, like 99% of them. He laughed and said, principal only? I'm a math guy. I need interest. I said, okay, here's how we can both win. This took 10 minutes. I'll do 18 months of principal only, get my principal way down. We'll take that balance at the time and we'll amortize it at 5.2% over 30 years. And we did a 20-year balloon. He said, yes, we both kind of won. That was in 2018. So they can do that. We do it on houses, just usually shorter terms, but we do it all the time. And think about the principal only component for a second, Jim, the recession hedge you create there and the profits you create there with our three payday system is usually in the six figure range over time.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it in the market that, I mean, we're in a changing market, obviously. Yeah. I get your thoughts on that, but in the market we just came out of where, you know, there was multiple offers, still extremely low inventory.
Crazy.
Were you struggling to find properties to buy, or appropriate?
Yeah, this is good. So, okay, the bottom line is, I'll give a couple answers. The bottom line is, it's all metrics. Did we have to speak to more people after, like, March and April of 20 was like picking things out of the barrel because everybody was confused and we were buying them like left and right. Then all of a sudden things got really good for sales.
Yeah.
When that happened, we had to talk to more people and we fish in a different pond. Like, did we go after for sale by owners then? No, they were selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Did we still go after expired? Sure. Because they can still, you know, there's always a reason they'll expire, functionality, price, whatever. Did we go after niched list off-market properties? Yes, in particular we did. So we went to, I love the list of out-of-state owners that are free and clear. I love that list.
Yeah.
To this day, we still do that. So yeah, now we're back to for sale by owners and, you know, so you just changed the pond you're fishing, that's all. When you get good at creative real estate, the market, you and I know about 32 years each, you there's no question that there's one constant in real estate, it's constantly changing. And people always go, I can't do this. No, you can do every deal. You just got to know how to do creative real estate so you can pivot as needed. That's all.
Yeah. Now, are you coming in and doing a lot of rehab, or are you just kind of turning them over, or is it varied?
We don't do rehab. I mean, I'll give you an example just today from one of my students, but we will mostly deal with nice homes,
mm-hmm.
Anywhere from low end to, we have students in California doing over $1 million, right? That's just the norm there. They don't find anything under it.
Right.
So what happens if you have a house that needs work? A student called me today. He's working on a sub two. If you're a realtor and just don't, it's new to you. It means I'm going to buy Jim's home. It's usually, unlike the free and clear person, he usually needs financial relief. And I'm going to buy it and everything's going to transfer like a regular closing, but the loan staying in his name. He's the guarantor. So Adam, my student, calls me this morning and says, Chris, I get the situation. This guy's going back to the military. He's hurting. He's out of money. He owes 168 grand, but the home is not finished. He started rehabbing it. I said, what's it worth finished? He said, about three. What's it need? 20 grand. That's it. This guy just wants to be done. So the goal, we're not done yet, is going to be to buy that for 168 grand just for the balance of the mortgage. That's it. That guy's name, when he goes in the military, will stay on that loan. But my guy, Adam, will own it in his LLC. Now, what will he do instead of pricing at 300? Because it needs like 20-ish. He'll price it at around 230 or 240. He's plenty of spread there. And he'll leave enough meat on the bone, so to speak, for the builder or rehabber that can't go out and get a conventional loan right now. They love these things for rent own. They love them. So on our three payday system, he'll get a builder to come in, give him a down payment, payday one. He'll get a monthly spread on the difference between the $1,500 for that underlying debt and what he charges him, call it $1,800, $300 a month. And then he'll get, on the back end of this thing, he'll get that markup of the property, but he'll also get all the principal pay down that accrues as that guy's fixing his home up on his property. It's pretty cool. So that's an example of where you can, in this market, buy sub two properties at 2, 3, and 4%. I don't know if we're going to see those rates again. You and I have seen a bit of change in interest rates.
No. So talk about right now. That's a concept I've heard a lot recently, is a subject to. Isn't there language? I mean, I'd love to have you explain it to me because I don't understand it well enough. My understanding was there's language in these mortgages that would prevent that you would have
due
to
on pay sale
at closing.
Yeah, due on sale clause. So here's, I'm going to rephrase what my attorney, and my disclosure is I'm not an attorney or tax specialist. Okay, I'm just going to tell you how we do it for your audience to know.
Yeah.
My attorney, when we first went to him, he gave us a junior attorney. This is back in 2013. And the junior attorney, when we did our first sub two deal back then, said, oh, I can't do these. There's a due on sale clause. And the senior attorney was very conservative in this area, sat him down and he said, look at him. There's nothing illegal about a sub two. A sub two violates the due on sale clause. And that's a contractual issue between the bank and the seller. So we make sure that our custom agreement that they sign off on that. But here's the deal, in all my years, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen to someone listening, but in all my years, 32, well, I've done hundreds of sub two deals and my students, obviously, and we've never had a bank call a note. Why? Because we pay the bill, just pay the bill. The banks don't want the property. Now, are there other things you should do with your attorney, in my opinion, what did they advise us to do? Yes. In 1982, the Garment-St. Germain Act was put in place that allowed families, say you and I were doing estate planning, we can put it into a trust and we can transfer it into an LLC for family planning, whatever, and it would not trigger that. So when we title these properties, we might say, if it's your property, Jim, and it's on 123 Jump Street, we might say, 123 Jump Street, Remley Family Trust. That's how we would title that. Just a safeguard. Other attorneys like you to put the deal through as a contract for deed because the deed sits in escrow, doesn't get recorded. So there's all kinds of ways to do it properly. You just need the right attorney. That's the punchline. You need the attorney that does sub two deals. The one that doesn't, they'll tell you can't do it. They don't know.
Right. Got it. Okay. Makes sense. And I've certainly, you know, in our state, they call them, you know, we've done all-inclusive wraparounds where we're wrapping the underlying note with a greater trustee around it. And that's kind of similar. And you're right. You know, it's all about the attorneys involved and which attorneys are willing to do that and which aren't. And, you know, in our market, we might have one or two that are willing to do it.
I would agree. A quick story. I called one of our students, went to Israel for a trip. And he said, hey, I'm nervous, Chris. I got this deal. God, I'm helping him with it. I said, don't worry about it. Go. I'll find an attorney for you. This is before we have the attorney now. I call four attorneys, Jim, and I know you can do it in all these states. And four attorneys told me, you can't do that. So I call mine here and said, you got to get me an attorney that can do something in New Jersey. And he found me an attorney who today we use and the whole community does that does these in 32 states.
Wow.
32 states. It's a pleasure. He got it closed in like 7 days. So that's what I mean by, it's like calling a divorce attorney, asking for, you know, estate planning. You're going to get the wrong answer. So go to the right attorney.
Got it. Okay. Now, and with your three payday system, what I'm hearing you say is that there's an exit that's usually occurring 18 to 24 months out.
So that's early. I like to go, and when I write them up, especially in uncertain markets, I like to write them up between 3 and 10 years. But when a buyer comes in and they get that mortgage ready plan, most of them can do it in under three. And if I have a longer term of the seller, I'll give the breathing room and just don't pressure them. If I have a tighter term of the seller, I'm going to stay running their back and making sure they're hitting all the benchmarks to get that done. So anytime between literally 2 years and 10 years, you have these things staggered cashing out, which is really cool for cash flow.
So let me ask you this, because I'm curious about this, because I've done some rent to own deals as well. And when you do your rent to own, are you with the buyer that's renting, who's going to be the future owner, are you setting a price now? Or are you saying, no, it's going to be appraised at the time you want to pull the trigger?
We do set a price now. So I say this to them in this language. I say, look, I'm not your landlord. You are a buyer. You just don't have a mortgage yet. So you're going to act and behave like an owner. And that means you're going to fix things. You're going to upgrade things as long as it's permitted and I know about it. And third, you're going to capture equity like a buyer, or the market goes down, that's just like a buyer. You're not going to call the bank and say, hey, my home went down, I got to change it. No. So most of the time, because our terms are long enough, they're benefiting big time. Like in this last bit, so many of them benefited hundreds of thousands of dollars, obviously.
Yeah. No, I was curious about that. And on the upside, it's all good, right? So when you're on an upswing, and I don't see prices going down because of our inventory's issues, right? But you could have a 2008 situation where prices go the other way and it won't appraise. Is that ever concern you?
No, we've had two, and we've done close to 1,000 deals. We've had two that appraisal came in a little low. What are our options? The agreement with the buyer has no financing, no appraisal contingency, none. So they have two options. We have a few. We can extend them and let them keep renting until the market comes back. They can close and bring more cash to the table, or they can walk. And we've seen all three. But for the most part, you're right. I think the billionaires don't know, so I don't know. But I think we're going to at least be stable. You know, I don't see an 08. 08 was...
I don't either. Yeah, I don't see that happening. Yeah. So let's talk about lead gen in this. You mentioned some great options, absentee owners that have 100% equity. But when you're targeting these, are you using specific list makers, you know, people that you're like propertyradar.com is one that we use a lot, or the Red X or things like that. Do you have one, the vendors that you're going to that are like specific that you like?
So we pull leads at the very top end of the funnel from My Plus Leads. They serve the community. And then we have other things like PropStream and then there's independence. Like most of the data has been around forever that we can buy lists, but all the online things now are definitely easier because you can sort and sift.
Handwritten note, is it postcard? Is it a letter? What are you sending?
We usually have VAs, virtual assistants, calling those lists. Then those that say, other than get lost, if they say anything else, then they're going to hand that lead slip to the investor and the investor is going to call. Now, do we do some mailings? Yes. If someone's getting super aggressive in a market and the lead flow that's coming in from My Plus Leads is not enough, then I'll suggest they do either postcards, or I used to use a lot the yellow letter. It just gets cumbersome. And sometimes people just don't get it. They got a little old out there, you know, the handwritten look. So the postcards are fine. You just have to realize with direct mail, when I started, I had no money. So I just did phone. So that's what I teach. But there are students that have great success. Every time I did a mailer for like 2,500 or 3,000 pieces, once I get on my feet, I'd get a deal. And our three payday deals, just to give you a metric, I should have gave you this. They range in the community from like 45 grand to 250 grand, all three paydays through the whole term, right? Yeah. Ours is on the lower end because we're in New England. It's a little lower. We're at like 75 or 78 grand, but picture that. So if you predictably can do one deal or owner financing, they're always in the six figure range, and you can do that every few months and you're a broker or a realtor, that's a big boost to cash flow, you know?
Sure. Okay. And in terms of a realtor doing this, I'm sure that in the interim also you pick up a ton of listings because you're just, you know, it's one or the other. You're either going to want to do this now or if it doesn't fit the realtor box, maybe, you know, working with you on a deal.
Yeah, we have really good brokers in the community. One's out in Virginia. I mean, she's just top notch. And she and her husband own their company. She's in our community for two reasons, she said. One, just the networking and the quality of the people. But two, so that her agents in particular, when they go into a listing appointment, and obviously on the buyer end too, right? A lot of buyers can't qualify, 80% of them right now.
Right.
So they use it for the plan B. They don't lead with it. So if they're calling and the seller says, are you a realtor? They say, I'm licensed and I'm also calling as an investor. Simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it might open the door with the investor as an investor angle rather than, you know, a lot of people shut realtors down automatically.
Well, it does. I remember all the days I called, right? Now I call, this is for the last 10 years, but I call now and they say, you're a realtor? I say, no, I just want to buy it. Oh, okay. You can feel the wall come down, right? So it is different.
Got it. Now, with your group that you're working with, they are tending to do how many deals in a year? What would be the average, like 4, 5, 10?
It's funny. We do a monthly all hands meeting with our company, and we invite a student on each month so that the team gets to see. They don't get to see all our students. And this student said he loves it because if you come in this community and you want to do two a year, you love your job. You do, like, we have doctors, attorneys. You just want to do a couple of these deals a year because of the upside? Fine. We have other people like him, this guy Adam, who did two deals in his first 32 days and has got a goal to do 26 this year and probably hit it, right? Mm-hmm. So we have both ends of the spectrum.
Got it. And would you say that most people that are getting into this are coming in, like they have another job and they're doing this part-time?
Most. I'd say 99%. But also most of those come in and say, give me a plan. Like, can you help me strategize on how I can get out of my job? We just had another gentleman join us from Texas. He and his wife, top notch. And literally, I think they need to replace like 300 grand a year. So is that going to happen in 6 months? No, but we can get after it and give them a plan that's somewhat predictable. We've been helping people escape their jobs since 2014. It's been like the hot item. COVID, as you know, caused so many people to leave corporate and open their own business. And by the way, that causes an onslaught of buyers for us because they can't get qualified today, right? They need nice. Seasoning. Yes. So it's amazing what's been changing in the market right now, in particular. We are getting hit from big companies doing rehabs and wholesales for their community to say, could you please teach our community how to do creative? Because with the interest rates rising in the last 7 days, Yahoo Finance, Wall Street Journal, Inc., they're all putting articles out about why creative financing and owner financing are on the rise because of interest rates. Couldn't be better timing in my 32 years.
Do you ever see, you mentioned the low interest rates, which we're never going to see again. Do you ever have sellers say to you, hey, I prefer that you assume the loans? I mean, why not assume it? And do you say, absolutely not, we don't do that?
Yeah, I say, absolutely not, I don't do that. Exactly right. Because that, as you know, implies I'm going to go to the bank and apply, and that's not happening.
Yeah, but what is your reason for not doing it? I mean, when you're talking to the seller, because I mean, I'm curious to hear what your answer would be.
Yeah, usually I'll say a couple things and I'll say script. Usually if someone's talking about sub two or if I'm going that direction, remember that's probably the person that financially needs help like yesterday. Right. But if it does come up, I don't think I've ever been asked that. But if it does come up, it would just be flat out not our protocol. It's like an attorney call. I did a 4-unit building, right? Because you can do this in any asset class, even though we teach single. I did a 4-unit building. Guy wanted to do it with me, owner financing, daughters were getting out of college. He said, I'm done. So I said, okay, no money down. Give you a price though, right? We'll do a 4-year deal. His attorney said, we need a personal signature. Call my attorney. And my attorney said, oh, no, he doesn't do that. And they said, why? I said, you get a first mortgage on the property. That's your security. If it doesn't work, then don't do the deal. Like, if this is going to keep you up and I don't do it. We ended up doing the deal. He was super happy and we made our money. We just protocol. We just don't do it.
Got it.
After the crash, I will not do that again.
I'm curious. At the crash in 2008, did you lose a lot of property? Was that the reason?
Yeah, I should have said that. So I had 23 properties going into it. And most of those were, at the time, I was on this run of condominium conversions where I'd take a 2 to a 6-unit building. I think the biggest one was maybe 10. And it was a multifamily. We would change, you know, get the master condo docs and rehab it. But the rehab in those days was like, put the paint in, you know, make sure the place is tidied up, and we'd sell my cupcakes. And I got stuck with a bunch of those before the crash, but I was on every loan personally. We had some mixed use, we had some commercial and some singles. Every one of them, Jim, it took me from February of 08 to 12 to work out of. That was that 4-year thing I said. 4 years. And my son was in the next office. I think it was the best education he ever had. It was painful for me, but.
Yeah. Wow. So interesting. I was just in Boston. So we're talking about where you live in Rhode Island. So you're in Rhode Island, which is an extremely small state. I mean, it's basically, you know, a county in a lot of areas.
It's a dot.
Yeah. It's a very, very small area. So I'm curious. So you're in New England, which are all kind of small states. Are you doing multiple states then?
Yeah. So what happened was, it was just me. And then right before my son Nick came on back in like 14, my wife said, why don't you, I just wasn't getting enough leads. And so I started going to Massachusetts, which is where I was a broker back then. So I was very comfortable. Yeah. And then my wife said, why don't you expand to Connecticut? I never did a bit of business in Connecticut. We, within 14 months, had 70% of our properties in Connecticut. So we hit a nice spot. And what we realized in hindsight, we didn't know, I wish I could tell you I thought of it, was taxes are really high there. And so people just can't afford some of the properties conventionally. And the way we structure it gives them time to get themselves up to par, you know. But yeah, we do 3 states typically with us. But remember, we're revenue sharing on all these student deals all over the country now. So technically, I've got like a microcosm of society, so to speak. I get a really good pulse on East Coast to West Coast. Yeah. Students come in every week, you know.
Is there a personality type that does better with this than others?
Well, you just can't be an introvert, frankly, but your audience probably isn't because they're in the real estate business, right? So you just got to, you know, that's a biggie. Second thing is, I don't know why, but I have some superstars in the community that were engineers. I have no idea why. And maybe it's coincidental, but they're just crushing it.
Wow. Okay. That's great.
No idea. Okay. Usually it's managing expectations, Jim. It's like, because the marketing's out there that we referred to earlier, both of us, because of that, they got to just manage their expectations. As you know, if they come in and put the blinders on for 3 years and don't look for shiny objects, they'll have an amazing experience. But it's the ones that come in and go, oh, I got to do a deal in 60 days, or I'm going to try this. As you know, if you try it, you're never going to have success. You're not going to have success, not in real estate.
No. So you've got a lot of different, you're the author of a bunch of books, and I want you to tell us your latest and greatest, but also you got a podcast and you've got a lot of places where people can find you. Tell us, you know, how people can learn more about you and your program and everything else.
Sure. We created a link and I'll give it right now for all your tribe and get a free book. And again, because I don't love all the marketers out there, this is not free book, but oh, by the way, put your credit card in for shipping. This is free. Like, we're going to ship it from this office. Give us about a week or two. Go to wicked smart books, wickedsmartbooks.com/gym and the numeric number one. Awesome. I'm big on free gym because there's a lot of shiny objects out there, and I want you to be able to be committed if you decide this is an issue you like, or you want to tack it on to your realtor business. They can go to smartrealestatecoach.com/masters with an S, master's class, if they don't mind listening to my New England accent for another 55 minutes. It's free.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, it's very fascinating. I'm absolutely fascinated by the conversation and all the information you dropped. Appreciate I think it. A lot of students can you get a lot out of it and go out there and start buying some properties for their own account and start building some wealth.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Chris, for being on the program.
Appreciate it.
If you liked this program, please subscribe and leave a review. And if you would like to explore our coaching platform, please check out www.erealestatecoach.com for 2 free weeks of coaching. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the eRealEstate Coach Podcast.